Well, I'm delighted to welcome now here on Talk Radio Europe, Paul Anthony Jones on his book, Around the World in 80 Words. I nearly said it the other way around, Around the World in 80 Words. That would have been a different, that's part two maybe. Good afternoon, Paul. How are you?
I'm very well, Dave. How are you?
I've just given you a new book idea.
Yeah, that's the sequel, definitely.
Yeah, that's the sequel, that's for sure, yeah. This is a great book. Just tell us, give us a synopsis for it, and then I'm going to ask you where the idea came from after that.
It's a kind of, I've called it a circumnavigation of a language. So it starts in London and it ends back up in London. But we kind of journey around the world, stopping off at 80 different places and talk about a word in the language or a set of words in the language that we owe to each location. So it covers something like 60 countries, six continents. I desperately tried to get Antarctica in there, but I couldn't find anything, unfortunately. But six continents and 60 countries, 80 words altogether.
Who planted this idea in your head?
I stumbled across a word in an old dictionary of army slang, World War army slang, which was to Stellenbosch someone, which is to kind of tactically demote them.
Oh, that's a great word, isn't it?
This word comes from a place in South Africa. Anyone who drinks wine will have heard of Stellenbosch. But it's a place in South Africa that during the Boer War was home to what was called a remount camp, which was a camp for army horses. And being in charge of that camp or being put in charge of that camp was a really responsible job. But it wasn't sort of frontline duty. It wasn't kind of being involved in the real tactics of warfare. So anyone that was taken from the front line and put in charge of looking after the horses was said to have been Stellenbosch. They'd kind of been sidelined slightly and sort of kept out the way so that they couldn't kind of, they were kind of out of harm's way, I guess. It was that kind of idea. And this just really struck a chord with me. I love the fact that someone had thought that that process, that that scenario needed a word. And I also like the fact that it had this story behind it, that this story was connected to a place name, and that gave me the idea to collect a set of these words together.
I think I've been Stellenboshed in my time, that's for sure.
I think most people have, yeah.
I think that's a great word, and I'm going to use it, and I'm going to look like I know what I'm talking about, hopefully. So I'll even quote the South African thing and everything. Your book's good for that, isn't it? Because it's one of these books where, you know, you can glean this information, and you can go and impress your friends with this stuff.
I've tried to kind of mix together words that you will have heard of, like Turkey and Brazil nut and the story behind those, but also some really obscure ones. And quite often when you're talking about the history of words, it doesn't matter how familiar or unfamiliar they are, you have to kind of talk about it in quite high level sort of linguistic terms. You're talking about the kind of development of the language. Yeah. So I've kind of tried to boil it down so that, you tell these stories as kind of interestingly as possible without kind of bamboozling people with real linguistic kind of terminology.
So it's in layman's terms then, basically.
I hope so, yeah. I hope it's quite entertaining and quite accessible.
Did you find, I mean, you mentioned some easier words there. I mean, maybe we'll touch on those and have a bit of a festive look. Turkey and Brazil nuts and so on. And I suppose, really, they're quite easy to actually find. You must have found other places, like you say, some of them were where it wasn't possible to find a word at all. So it must have been difficult. You must have been really researching quite a lot to get this all the way around the world.
Yeah, this is the odd thing about this book. I think this is about the sixth or seventh book about language that I've written now. And the research for this took about 4 months. And then actually writing the book took about 3 weeks. It's kind of like once the legwork had been done and once the route was all planned out and the order that the chapters would take place in, once all that was sorted, writing it was a lot of fun. There's some great stories to tell. But actually putting it together, the sort of nuts and bolts of it, was really difficult.
How did you get the order then? Because obviously you start off in London, you head off through Europe. Was it a natural, if I was going to, you know, literally drive around the world or whatever, or sail around the world, does it not follow that route?
Yeah, I've tried to kind of keep it to make sure it makes as sort of geographical sense as possible. I've got an old world map that was all folded up at the back of a cupboard, and I got that out and literally put stickers on and drew crosses on it and joined them all up with a big line and kind of researched this. I had this up on my wall for ages while I was working on it. So it was a real kind of nuts and bolts operation, definitely, to get it in an order that made sense.
Yeah, and some of the words, like you say, are quite well. Some of them are a little bit close to the bone as well, aren't they?
there's some interesting choices in it, definitely.
I won't mention Sofia, Bulgaria, but if you want to find out what we're talking about, and you'll have to buy the book, because we're a family show. But I mean, I'm joking, because most of it's absolutely fine. And there's one really, which I suppose is where we're broadcasting this afternoon, Gibraltar. Tell us more about the siege of Gibraltar.
Yeah, this again comes from an old army slang dictionary that I found. Gibraltar's been besieged because of where it is about 14 times in its history. And this took place at different dates across different years, across centuries and centuries and centuries. And there's an old joke among the Royal Navy kind of back in the 19th century, early 20th century, that if you got caught having a drink when you shouldn't be having a drink, you would say that you were toasting the siege of Gibraltar as if it was an anniversary. Because there's been so many, chances are there's probably one coming up pretty soon. So you could, it was a way of getting away with having a drink at whatever time you wanted.
Oh, right. That's great, isn't it? I think
that's probably the most useful one in the book, I think.
Yeah, actually, we can all use that one, maybe. Yeah. there's some great ones in here. One that's in the news quite recently with a new president. We mentioned it already, Brazil Nut.
Yeah, Brazil Nut's an interesting one because it's one of these sort of chicken and the egg things. It's was the country named after the nut or was the nut named after the country? And it's a bit of a grey area, this one, because the problem is that we don't know where the word Brazil comes from at all. And there's two different theories. One of them is that there is this kind of Atlantis sort of island that people presumed was somewhere over the other side of the Atlantic that was called Brazil. And we think maybe that when South America was actually discovered, people thought that they'd found this fantastic island and started using the name. That's one theory. The other one is that it comes from the name of a timber that it was used to make a sort of red, bright red dye. And that was known as Brasil rather than Brazil. But the problem with that is there's that timber originally came from kind of Southeast Asia, came from Indonesia. So we've got these two different theories. We don't quite know which one's right. They both might be wrong for that sake. But for some reason, either Brazil became known because people thought they'd discovered something else or because it was a way that it was a place that this timber came from. From there, we started taking in nuts that were grown in Brazil. And so Brazil, the country, attached its name to the nut that way. But where the name itself came from, there's a big kind of question mark hanging over it.
If you know the answer, do ring in and let us know.
Yeah, I'd be interested to know.
Any Brazilians out there might know. Bikini, then. That's one which is popular here in Spain, of course. And it's one of those words where you just never really... This is the interesting thing of this book. A lot of these words, it's not until somebody writes it down in the book and you think to yourself, I've never thought to think about where that word comes from originally.
Yeah, it's a bit of an unusual word. You can sort of tell by writing it down that it's not English words. Yeah. It comes from a place called Bikini Atoll, which is in the Marshall Islands, which are right in the middle of the Pacific Ocean. And it's where in the 1940s that the atomic bomb tests were carried out. And of course, this was reported all over the world that this new technology had been developed and it was immensely impactful and very destructive. At around about the same time, it so happened that there was a designer in Paris who had invented or had conceived of the bikini, a two-piece swimsuit. And he wanted his design to have as big an impact, figuratively speaking, of course, as the tests that had been going on in the Bikini Atoll. So he stole the name, applied it to his design, and we've had bikinis ever since.
There we go. So you got him to thank, man. Now, this one, I'm purely using this next one so I can play Olivia Newton-John. Tell me Xanadu.
Xanadu, yeah. If people think that this is just sort of
Olivia Newton-John song.
Yes, Olivia Newton-John, we can credit her for it. Yeah, people think it's kind of just a made-up word. It actually comes from a real place in China, and it was popularized in English because of the poem Xanadu that was written in Xanadu did Kubla Khan, which was the old Coleridge poem. But it looks such an unusual word when it's written down that I think people assumed that it was... So it's like Timbuktu. I think people assume that it isn't a real place, but it actually is. And so it kind of ended up in the language as a byword for any sort of far-flung, distant, magical location. But it is a genuine place. It's Shangdu, which is an old sort of Mongol capital of China.
Yeah, because there was a 60s song as well. I can't remember who sang it now. And it was called The Legend of Xanadu. So it's... There's lots of kind of... mentions of it, so I was just it's interesting to see where that came from, and I never knew it was a real place.
I didn't think many people do. It's the same with Timbuktu, which is in Mali. I think people think that it's just a sort of made up random series of syllables, but you can actually track it down on a map.
Yeah, because my dad used to say, well, you know, it feels like we're going to Timbuktu and back, and so, I don't know where. It's funny, isn't it, how these words come into our language, how they evolve into our language and we use them, and actually we don't necessarily question why we use them.
Yeah, I think that's what makes stories like this kind of so interesting, is that it makes you stop and think about individual words sort of objectively, rather than just using them in passing and thinking, well, that's what that word means. If you stop and kind of go, actually, I wonder where, you know, Timbuktu comes from. I wonder where Xanadu comes from. It sort of stops you and makes you think.
Now, this next one, because of my other role, I'm a pastor of a church. Toronto Blessing. I think I know what this means, but I'm not read it, this section of the book yet, so you tell me. Toronto, Canada,
yeah,
of course.
This is a new one for me, actually. I wanted to put Canada in there, and there's a couple of entries that I talk about. You talk about the origin of Labrador is one of them, and Klondike, meaning a sort of sudden explosion of gold, as there was a gold rush there. But, a Toronto Blessing is a sort of fit of religious ecstasy. It's a sort of sudden kind of overcoming of religious emotion. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in the early
mid-90s,
I think it was about 94, it was reported that this kind of thing was going on in churches because of a kind of evangelical pastor. Mm. And this was massively reported all over the world. I had never heard of this expression until I started putting this together, but it was very, very well known at the time, apparently.
Yeah, it was. I think early to mid-90s, and obviously started with some pastors in Toronto, and it kind of spread around the world, really, a lot of the evangelical churches.
It started in Canada and it ended up, I know there was some events kind of along these lines happened in Britain. I didn't know that.
I've been going to church since I was 17, and this was something I was seeing happening in the churches where I was in Derby at the time. It's quite amazing, really. And then, I'll carry on my little journey, because I was from Derby, but then I ministered in Coventry for 7 years, and everybody laughed and joked because you've been sent to Coventry, Dave.
Sent to Coventry is a really good one, but it's one of the ones that has a big question mark hanging over it, and we're not entirely sure. At the end of all the different explanations of why people get sent to Coventry, we still can't pinpoint which one it is.
It's about not being talked to, isn't it? I think, you know, it's something to do with people ignoring you, or they're not going to talk to you, or something like that.
Yeah, if you kind of ostracize someone from a group if you send them to Coventry. There's lots of theories where that comes from. There's an idea that it was the site of a prison and that people would be sent there. There's the idea that it has something to do with the Civil War. There's an idea that it has something to do with a monastery that was there for people who are sent sort of into religious seclusion in Coventry. There's all sorts of different theories, but unfortunately there's not the evidence there to kind of pinpoint which one it is. But the stories themselves are just worth telling with that one. It's a great one.
And again, it's a classic example of the fact that most of us use phrases and we don't really know what we mean or what the origins are. And there's times I've heard people say that to me because I've moved to Coventry for 6 years. And let's just pick one more. And this one, let's do Turkey because a lot of people are trying to put it off at Christmas. We'll eventually arrive. Turkeys, meat, how does all that work together?
Yeah, this is a good example of one of the ones that if you actually start to think about it, it makes even less sense because turkeys come from nowhere near Turkey. They come from North America.
So
it kind of makes no sense no matter what angle you look at it. It's a bit of a long story, but originally the word turkey was used of kind of any large exotic looking bird that was imported from Asia or Africa into Europe via Turkey. So it was peacocks and pheasants and guinea fowls and all sorts of things would just kind of come under this umbrella name of turkey, if you like. When actual North American turkeys started arriving, it didn't matter that they came from somewhere completely different. We just used the same word for them. They were just another weird looking bird that wasn't British that came to us from trade ports in Turkey. That bird ended up being really, really popular, a lot more numerous than other ones. And so it's that bird rather than any other that the name kind of really became attached to. But it was originally kind of just a placeholder name, really, more than anything else.
Yeah. Well, let's have one more then, and we'll stick on this little Christmas theme for a moment. Let's talk Bethlehem, Palestine. What did Bethlehem leave us with?
Yeah, this is a really interesting one because it's become a word that it kind of doesn't look like at all. Bethlehem is the origin of Bedlam, as in a sort of scene of madness. Yeah. And there was a hospital in London that had the name of Bethlehem in it. And it's over time it became associated with the treatment of kind of mental disorders and all sorts of things at a really arcane time in the history of medicine. So I don't think it was the sort of best institution possible, but it was known under this title of Bethlehem. that's a bit of a mouthful to English speakers. So the more that word gets used, the more it kind of became truncated, and we ended up with Bedlam, which came to have all these associations with madness and with real kind of antics, really bizarre antics, and that's the word that we're left with today.
Ah, that's fantastic. Now, that's just reminded me, and I'm just looking through the index here of the book, which is a fantastic book. Is Dulali in there?
It is, yeah.
I can't see it at the moment, India. So maybe, yeah. I've just been searching through the index, I still can't see it, but it just reminded me, Dulali, you know, because you mentioned that hospital there.
Mm, yeah, Dulali, that's another one. It comes from a place called Deolali in India, which was a transit camp, a British Army transit camp, and people would end up waiting there for so long in really bad conditions that they would end up kind of losing their mind in this kind of subcontinental heat. That's where the word Dulali for a synonym for madness comes from.
Fantastic. Now, we've done, what, maybe eight there, the most, six or seven, and there's 80 in the book. So there's so many to go out. There's Labrador in there, loads. Satsuma, where does that come from? So I'm going to kind of whet your appetite a little bit. What would you expect Belgium to bring? You'd never expect that word to come from Belgium. So I'm going to leave those hanging, and you're going to have to order the book. It's available on our website. I'm going to give you all that information in a moment. It's called Around the World in 80 Words. I keep wanting to say 80 Days. Sorry, Paul. It's just so intrinsically linked in my mind. Around the World in 80 Words, A Journey Through the English Language, and it's by Paul Anthony Jones. I think now what your next book should be to travel to all these places.
Yeah, maybe I should start a travel blog about this. Yeah, if my publisher wants to fund me for that, I'd be more than happy.
I was going to say, it's going to cost you a bit to do it, probably.
Yeah, yes, just a little bit.
But brilliant. Fantastic, Paul. Thanks for coming on. It's a great book. It really is. It's going to make a great present as well to give to somebody. But it's one of those books which you just start reading and you don't put it back down again because you're just moving from chapter to chapter and gleaning the information. It's fantastic.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for coming on. Really appreciate your
time.
That's good. Cheers.
My pleasure. Thanks, Dave.